Oh my gosh.
You know, well, I'm a chicken fry.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, he does. Hey, that's our new intro.
Is it working?
Yeah, it is.
Hey, welcome to Fried. I'm one of the hosts here, John Reap. Sitting to my right is the lovely Sarah Tiano.
Oh, I did not think you were going to say that word, but okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're lovely.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. We're going to pretend this is our first time doing this because, we've done a couple. This is our fake first time doing our podcast. We want this to be the first one you hear.
Because we have a very special guest. And he couldn't call in, but this guy called in.
Yeah, we got another guy.
Yeah, we got another guy. So Brad Paisley is on the line. Hi, Brad.
Hi there. So is this your first one of these?
No.
Well, it's the first one we're going to air because, you know, we got you. But we've done like five that are like, you know, haven't come out yet.
John is really good at talking.
Yeah.
Have you noticed?
Yeah. This is our first one.
Technically, this is the first one that's going to air, but we've recorded a bunch of other ones.
And do you expect people to listen to this?
I don't know. What
you think people will listen to?
We're hoping to listen to
what
this
What do you
one.
Even call this?
It's just called Fried.
It's called Fried. It's just like a Southern podcast with me and Reap because we have Southern roots, but he's a little bit more Southern than me, so he's teaching me more Southern stuff, and I'm teaching him, how to be a lady.
Book learning. It comes out on Fridays.
Comes out on Fridays, and this one is going to come out the Friday before our Netflix special airs.
Right. Yep.
Oh, great.
Yeah, okay. Excited?
I'm excited, are you?
I'm very excited. I saw a little preview of it somewhere.
Yeah, it's called Brad Paisley's Comedy Rodeo.
Yeah.
When did that name come about?
I love it.
Netflix sort of, I don't think they came up with it or not, but they basically said, we want something that says that this is a bunch of things, like a bunch of people, and sort of country, and that was their idea of it. So that's what it's called.
I love it. And it's 2 hours long.
Is it really?
Right?
No, it's not. I don't think it's 2 hours.
Oh, okay. I don't know where I saw
hour,
that.
Isn't it?
I have
no
idea.
No, it's more like an hour.
Okay.
That's like a little over 60.
Ah.
I think.
And then
it feels like 2 hours.
How much of John's set did you cut out of it?
almost all of it. Basically, if you introduce John Reap, he comes up, and then we like play a couple of chords from Riverbank,
yeah.
And then he says goodnight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like it. That's the best part of my set was when you were up there.
Yeah, we just kept it to the last.
Good.
I mean, I me and John have had the pleasure of working with you for 3 years. And let me just say, Bradley, it was so fun to watch the other comics just be like completely in awe with you and how funny you are. I think Brad and I...
Well, that's nice of you to say.
Well, no, I think John and I have kind of taken it for granted that you're this really funny guy. And we don't really think of how... I mean, I feel like the country community knows that you're really funny because of the CMA Awards, but, and because of,
you know, a lot of funny songs.
Funny songs, but, I mean, I feel like you are really known for a lot. You're known for a lot of songs. Make people cry, too, so.
Right. How did this whole thing come about for you? Like, why did you want to even jump into the comedy world?
I don't know. I think that it came about because I've always sort of enjoyed writing funny stuff the most. I like writing songs that are little sort of, I guess, three-act comedy things.
Mm-hmm.
That are, you know, they have their, you got your first verse and then you hook it one way and your second verse and then a bridge. And it's all very much sort of script writing in some ways because the way the country music is so descriptive. And then growing up and performing, I learned that you can get, it's a lot more fun if the stuff between songs is funny and interesting. Like when you're talking, I quickly learned, oh, there's buttons you can push as opposed to one of those performers that just kind of thinks, you know, you'll go to see a performer and they just, they think they're interesting when they're talking between songs and they're not.
Yes. Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And it's always been fascinating to me that you know, some people are good at the banter and some people aren't. And so I studied that quite a bit, and it was kind of a natural progression to say, let's try to do something where the banter is the largest portion of this, as opposed to just sort of a way between songs and write things that sort of exist just to be that interesting thing, which is really what stand-up is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel like, you know, so many times in comedy, I've met a lot of musicians who are fascinated with stand-up and a lot of comics who are fascinated with music. And I feel like that's because we're all trying to get a harness on that time between,
mm-hmm.
you know, the time between songs for you and the time between jokes for us. And also, like, man, there are so many times when I've been doing stand-up where a joke doesn't work, and I'm like, I wish I just had a guitar and could go ring.
Right, right. It's nice to have
to
that
kind
little.
Of cover it up.
Which is a really fascinating thing, because in my line of work, you find yourself sort of thinking the opposite. Like, you're playing these songs and you're thinking, what am I going to do between these? Like, in between the songs is when they sort of pay attention.
Right.
Right.
It's sort of the different, you know, it's different. It's sort of like that's when you can really score in music, because you really have, like, they're not expecting much between songs, but if you're giving them something really interesting between songs, then they really are, that's just gravy.
Yeah.
They're just like, this is, and that's why that's such a fun challenge to be a part of. Any sort of stand-up thing like this. And I mean, I really think that people are ready for this collision a little more. You know, when you think about the artists that, or when you think about the comedians that incorporate it, like Dimitri Martin, he doesn't necessarily ever do songs, but he's got that guitar and that harmonica.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just sort of like Stephen Wright jokes with guitar. And Stephen Wright does that too. Like, I've seen him grab a guitar and goof around.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Steve Martin was kind of the first to do that with an instrument, where the instrument became some sort of interesting. It's almost like watching two different acts at the same time. Like, you got a great banjo player, you got a guy with an arrow through his head.
Yeah.
And I think that it's fascinating to me to think about what could happen. And we've experimented before, where you guys came out to Hollywood Bowl and told jokes between songs and went out to a gig or two that way. In these large arenas, it's not going to take much for the audience to get to where they're not sort of wondering what's happening.
Right.
When they see comedians between, you know what I'm saying? Like, people have tried it. But if we really ever got there, like if this Netflix special caught on and people got to know me a little more like this,
mm-hmm.
it'd be really fun to see if we can make comedy a little more of a part of my tour than it already is.
Yeah, because I feel like that is the one hurdle that I've had when I'm promoting this special, is that they're like, oh, they're even giving Brad Paisley a Netflix special now. And I'm like, but do you know how funny Brad is? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, then you just wait.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what this is really going to showcase, because I feel like your core audience watches the CMAs, but maybe they've never seen you in this capacity. And they certainly haven't seen myself and John and Nate and John Heffron and Mike, you know, in the capacity where we're all singing a country
together
song.
on stage in the very beginning. That was fun.
Yeah.
Hey, how did I saw a preview? Yeah. I saw a little preview with David Hasselhoff. How's he involved? I'm curious.
Oh,
about
yeah.
That. Yeah.
Well, they wanted some sort of like intro cold open piece. And so they said, would it be, it'd be cool if you grabbed some sort of celebrity or somebody that has almost nothing to do with this and see if they want to like come up with a skit. And so Hasselhoff is in my latest video, and I'd gotten to know him, and you know, he's hilarious.
Uh-huh.
He's willing to goof around and make fun of himself at all times. He reminds me in some ways of Shatner that way, where it's sort of like these guys are legends and people weep when they meet them and stuff.
Right.
And yet he's sort of like, you know, what can I do that'll make you laugh?
Yeah.
And so basically we did a skit that opens the special. It's kind of me trying to get to the event.
Nice.
And I'll have a ride. And so I need Uber or something. And of course he has a very specific car that's able to take me to the event.
I wonder what that could be. And,
you know, and we just kind of have a couple of one-liners and stuff around that. Cause, like, there's a moment when Kit pulls up and I look at him and say, or he said, like, you need a ride? I can get you a ride. I'm like, what, you got, like, Uber or what? And he's like, and it pulls up and he's like, get in. And I'm like, do I need to drive? He's like, nope, it'll just take you there. And I'm like, oh, it's like a Tesla.
Oh, man. Well, I think that, like, that's another reason that I feel like comedy hasn't exactly, like, really pushed the limits in the country world is because there's a lot of art. I feel like country artists in some ways, like maybe older, like a generation before us, are, you know, a little bit like athletes. Like, they're not really able to take a joke on themselves. They're very serious. And you're one of the first people I ever met that was totally game with being made fun of. And you were going to strike back just as much. But I always really admired that about you. Do you feel like that's a new wave of things that's coming in country music where people are, like, artists are more willing to make fun of themselves?
I don't know. I mean, it depends. I mean, it just, there are artists that doesn't work for,
mm-hmm.
you know, like their imaging is so much a part of what people sort of spend their time trying to figure out when they get a record deal. They want to know, like, you know, do you wear a hat? Do you not wear a hat? Are you known for the, you know, like, what kind of shirts are you? You know, are you plaid shirts? Are you, like, are you plain button downs? Or do you like the ripped up T-shirt? Or, you know,
or do you wear girls' shirts like you? You wear a lot of really tight women's
shirts. Yeah,
blouses,
women's blouses,
like Prince.
You know, and so, but imaging is, you know, are you a tough guy? And are you are you known for? And I don't know. I mean, you know, athletes. Some athletes are, that is, as you both know, comedy's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the hardest things you can do. And one of the reasons why you don't see a lot of country singers doing it is that they don't want to look foolish, and maybe rightfully so, mm-hmm. because I've certainly done things that I regret in the name of comedy. But they don't want to look foolish, and they don't want their fans to, like, they want to bust their bubble, their image,
right.
you know, that they've spent so long cultivating. But when you look at the sports world, like, one of the best examples of the way it can pay dividends to be willing to do this is Peyton.
Yep.
Because, right. you know, and I just got done filming an entire fall's worth of Nationwide commercials with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen anything like his natural instincts and ability to make fun of himself. He, like, the whole premise of our commercials is him coaching me, thinking that he's an expert on music because he sings this jingle. Like, he thinks he's really good.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And that's his persona in that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would say, well, I don't want to come off like that.
Right.
I don't want to look foolish. I don't want to look dumb. I don't want to, you know.
Yeah.
And here he is, like, totally willing to do this and get up and host the ESPYs. And, you know, and in that, I don't know if there's a new generation of country singers willing to sort of, because you got to be willing to look foolish. Right?
Yeah.
No.
I think it just makes you more likable, you know. If you open yourself up that way, people, it makes you more real. I think people just like
well,
you
also,
more.
Well, also, like, in comedy, we know that, like, you have to make fun of yourself before you can make fun of anybody else. But I also think that, like, but when I look at people like you and Peyton, I mean, because, you know, I produced Peyton's bit on the roast, and I told him, I was like, you know, when people, they're going to be making jokes about you, if you like the joke, laugh. If you hate it, laugh harder.
Right.
Because the perception of you being able to take a joke is way more important than the jokes you're going to tell. which is kind of how we rebuilt Bieber's image.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Mm-hmm. And people look at you, it's such a nervous thing. Like, people look at you like, what do you think?
Right.
You know? And you're right. I mean, that's the best advice you can give. It's like, even if you hate it, even if it's off limits, just you better laugh. You can go back and yell at your manager later.
Right. Yeah.
And tell him, why'd you let me get into that situation? You sure as hell better laugh when the camera's on.
Right. I have to share this little quick story with you. When I worked with you in Beverly Hills, when I met Shatner, okay, he was in the wings. I went in and did like 20 minutes or something, and I came off, and there was William Shatner standing there in the wings right behind the curtain. He's got his arms open like he wants to hug me. And I walked straight up to him, and I'm like, I guess we're hugging. And I just kind of reached in and embraced him, and his mouth was right in my ear. And he just said two words, and then that was all. He goes, "What fun."
What did he say?
"What fun." It's like he just saw
what
me.
"What fun?"
Yeah, he's
what
like,
fun.
"What fun." Like, I thought it was
isn't
fun.
That cool? See, isn't that cool? It's like, he's just alive. Yeah. I mean, he is a case study in living.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he's late 80s now.
That's crazy.
And he's still... looks like he's 55, and he's just, like, acting like he's 30.
Man, yeah. I hope I have that kind of energy.
Yeah, me too.
Before we let you... go ahead. Sorry, go ahead, Brad.
I asked him what the secret is on that. And I asked, actually, Liz, and she said denial.
Denial?
Denial.
Denial. I said, how does he stay so young? She said denial. He just refuses to
sort
of accept that he's not... as young as he says he is, kind of like you.
Yeah, just like me. I just have one more question, because a lot of the people who are listening to this and who will watch the special, it starts with us singing a song, or at least when we taped it, it did.
Actually, it started when we taped it that way. It ends that way now.
Oh, no.
Which actually works really well, because you remember the way we play that song off?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And remember what I said would be really cool?
Yes.
Right.
That happened.
Oh.
We did it.
Okay, with a certain, okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so there's even
with a certain legendary country star. Yeah,
got it. Yeah.
So we have another cameo.
Yeah, there's another cameo in there.
Yeah, she's at the end. So,
wow.
So they stuck that. That was actually Netflix's idea, which is a great idea.
Nice.
We stuck that whole song at the end.
So my question is, do you want John and I to come and do that song with you at the CMAs this year? And, you know, we don't have to be at the beginning.
Yeah, it probably won't be on camera, but you can totally do that.
Okay. We'll just do it here in the studio and send it. We'll email it to you.
You're not even going to put up a fake camera to make us feel like we're there?
There's no film.
That would be great.
Wow.
Hey, let me ask you this, because we've been doing this with our little podcast where we start off with a question and just sort of so that way listeners get to know us or whatever. So the one we were going to do this episode was like, what's one of the craziest, weirdest, bizarre venues you've ever played? You know, I just performed in Little Rock, Arkansas for the first time in a wrestling ring. So that was
a wrestling ring?
Yeah, it was a wrestling
That's
ring.
That's actually cool. That would make a lot of sense for comedy.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's the first time it happened. I can't believe it. I mean, this might be a new trend.
Why does that make sense?
Go ahead.
I don't know. Something about it, like, they're like, it's almost Roman. You know, it's almost like a gladiator thing.
Yeah,
you're up there doing comedy and.
Yeah, it's theater in the round. You know, theater in the round.
That's sort of how Louis C.K. does it anyway. You've ever seen his stand-up special. There's a lot of times he's in the round or something in the middle, walking around.
And he ends up taking his shirt off and body slamming somebody.
Right,
taking a folding chair.
What about you, Brad? Have you ever performed in a place crazy?
Weirdest venue. I mean, I just hate anything where they're eating while you're getting sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, you know, and I can remember as a kid that sort of just like you know you've made it when you don't ask the question anymore, are they going to be serving dinner during the show?
Right.
Because there's just nothing worse than getting up and performing and there's people like passing plates around, yeah. And
and you hear silverware just clinking.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing if you're a jazz musician, but it's but when you're up there like talking and singing and
oh my God.
And you're and think about like some of the songs, like, you know, songs that just Whiskey Lullaby or something where people are dying, you know, and right. People are having their salad while you
right
while you do the
you're in the middle of a really sentimental like, line and you hear someone's like, "Could you pass salt?"
Yeah, or worse, you know, they're like. They're like pouring wine, and it's like he put that bottle to his head and pulled the trigger, and they're like, you know,
God, wow.
Living out right in front of me.
Jeez.
But that's always been. I mean, I don't understand because country music is not good dinner music for many reasons.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you starting know. Out, you probably had to play a lot of crazy little honky-tonks and that kind of stuff where there's lots of booze flowing and, you know, always picture that.
Silver clinking around.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those though, you know, there's something less sacred about that because you just don't expect, you're not expecting anybody to pay attention anyway, so you're just, they're there to dance and get drunk and fight.
Kind of like when you play at home, huh?
Yeah, totally.
With your wife and kids, they're not paying attention.
I think the worst situation ever was the national anthem. I hate, first of all, national anthems
mm-hmm.
because singing those is similar. That's similar to singing at a wedding because, I mean, and I'll do it at times, but everybody, like, no one's there to hear that. That's
right.
The thing.
Yeah.
It's a hard like, song anyway.
It's actually, yeah, it's okay. I mean, it's only hard because everybody knows it.
Yeah.
And you can't, like, I can mess my own songs up and look at people in the front row, and they've got it right, and I don't. But they're not sure if I meant to change it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Oh, he's singing this verse different now.
This is a West Virginia version.
You're not. Yeah, you can't change it. But it's similar in the sense that people can't wait for you to be done, and I don't like any gig where people can't wait for you to be done.
Right.
And the worst one ever was a hockey game in Wheeling, West Virginia. The minor league team's called the Washington or the Wheeling Nailers because they make nails and
yeah they are
something in our town, so they called them Nailers.
That's that was my nickname in high school.
Nailer.
Yeah, I bet.
Sarah Nailer.
Nailer, I hardly know her. But I walked out on the ice and they didn't have like carpet or anything, like they didn't roll out a carpet or anything onto the ice so that you wouldn't bust your ass.
Uh-oh.
And I walked out there in cowboy boots to sing the national anthem, and yeah. The spotlight hit the microphone in the dead center, like center court,
mm-hmm.
and there was nobody there at the, like as the spotlight hit until I slid in, like I was sliding into home plate because I just busted my butt and slid into the hole.
Wait, is there video of this?
I know.
I need to see this.
No, that was like 91. They didn't. People didn't have phones and stuff.
Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, thank God.
Well, you dodged a bullet there. I don't like, man, that's man. That's one for the. I don't like to see that.
I can just imagine it though, and it's beautiful.
But I can remember walking out there, like, "Please welcome to sing the national anthem, local musician," as they're announcing me, and I go, you know, that whoa 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 whoa, and you such a slow fall. And as I'm going down, I'm thinking, please. Hit your head and die. Like,
yeah, at least a concussion. I don't want to remember this
you
ever.
You never know what happened.
Right. Well, that was 91, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like 19. Yeah.
Like, yeah, I was young.
It's got to be so hard to sing, too, when you're trying to keep your balance, I would think.
Well, totally.
Yeah, because then you get back up, you're like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah, you can't just stand
it's
still.
So, it was so dumb. It's like all they did was stick a black microphone stand, a tripod, in the middle of the ice with a spotlight on it.
They set you up.
That's cold.
That's almost like
on purpose.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's like, let's say, there's like roadies taking bets. Like, hey, you gonna make it? No, hey, you gonna
bust that. Oh, that's amazing. You're amazing. I'm so glad. I can't believe you called in for us, and that's
thanks,
so
Brad.
Nice. And Thank you for letting us be a part of this special with you, which comes out August 15th on Netflix, and it's called Brad Paisley's Comedy Rodeo, and you've done so much for me and John. Well, I can't believe you did this, too.
Yeah, thank you.
You guys did a great job on it, and I think it's going to be fun to see what people think, because I've watched the whole thing after they got the full edit, just and really everything lands. It's just really cool in the sense that it's got a laid back sort of feel to it. It's not, you know, some comedy specials don't work because they it's almost like they're trying too hard, and we certainly weren't.
That's for sure.
Right.
Oh, amazing. Well, hopefully good. We get to do another one. I mean, this was just a blast, and you're so funny.
Yeah, I think we will. I think that there's, like we've talked about, I think there's a really fun concept in taking over the way that sometimes we'll go play music in a club after a big concert.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we'll take over the local honky-tonk and just sing some songs with the band. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's the same thing could be done at a comedy club where we goof around and
come in
and go to... I was seeing that the other day when we first launched the tour in June. We were up in Saratoga Springs, New York, and we had 2 days there because we were rehearsing. And one of the days I was running around just I went to a coffee shop and stuff and was kind of jogging through this little town. And they had a comedy club in Saratoga, which was like this little hole in the wall in the downtown street. And it looked like, you know, it was like a 1,000-square-foot comedy club.
Yeah.
And I thought, boy, this would have been perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Just to play this first concert and then all of us go back there and just start comedy at midnight and see what happens.
That would be a fun little endeavor. You know?
Because, I mean, the amount that we laugh when we're all just hanging out, just like screwing around.
Well, that time at his house we all went to rehearse was like just a blast.
Yeah.
You know? That was amazing in and of itself. You know, if that's all we had done, that's great.
That's a great show.
That was fun.
I know.
Yeah, well, we should film that next time, too. That sitting around the bar would be a great way to open one.
Everyone trying to pitch ideas.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, we should just film that next time. They're like, we need a cold open. I'm like, you should have filmed us sitting around talking about it.
Yeah, exactly. What we would do for a cold. Just pitching ideas to you is always like so fun and funny. Because when you hate something, you're like, uh-huh, yeah, that sounds, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, well, that'll actually evaporate pretty quickly because I'm eventually just going to, I'll get like I am with you guys where I am with my co-writers where it's like, that's the dumbest crap I've ever heard.
I need you to leave.
And you're a waste of time.
Go stand in the corner. Yeah.
It was really funny. I felt like John and I were coming in at such an advantage to that filming, because like whenever the other guys wanted to ask you something, they would have us go ask you. They're like, you guys go ask him, like, we're too afraid. And we're like, he's not gonna hurt you.
He's a good guy,
he's just a normal dude.
Yeah.
But I think, like I said, we came in at an advantage knowing you before them, and we got to work with you before, so we know how you're such a relaxed guy and you make everybody feel normal, and I feel like maybe we've really settled into that a little too much. We should start remembering how famous Brad Paisley is.
Well, it doesn't
help that I got a bunch of bourbon in there either.
Well, I was going to say, and he's really good at pouring Guinness.
Oh, he's very good at pouring Guinness.
Yeah, there's an art form to it. You know, a lot of people might not know that. He's really good at pouring Guinness.
Loves.
Yeah. I can pour Guinness. I can do that.
You're very good at it.
Oh, well, thank you. That was amazing.
I can't believe you stayed on with us.
I know.
That long.
I
so
feel like
nice.
We've been keeping him way too long.
I know.
What's next for you? What are you doing? When you hang up the phone, what are you doing?
Picking up dinner to take home.
Yeah. What are you having? Little Caesars.
Yeah.
We went to Mount Pilot for Chinese.
Oh, look at that.
Nice.
See, I told you, just a normal guy.
Like, Mount Pilot get Chinese.
Oh my gosh. You're the best.
The best Chinese is in Mount Pilot. Everyone knows that.
Please tell Kim and the boys we say hello. And
I will.
You're the best. Thank you so much. We look forward to seeing what happens on August 15th.
Me too. I can't wait.
Okay.
And thanks for part of it.
Thanks,
right,
Brad.
Thanks,
good luck.
Brad.
See you, buddy.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Holy shit.
What a good guy. What was that, 30 minutes?
Holy cow.
I didn't think he'd stay on that long.
I thought we were going to give him for 5-10 minutes.
I know. At the
I wasn't
going
to waste his time.
I was trying to just, like, let's get these questions. Yeah. But then you don't want to cut him off either.
Yeah. You know, well, that's the thing that is cool. I always forget. Like, I mean, I feel like I know he's a normal guy, and we've hung out with him quite a few times, mm-hmm. and we know he's just like a normal comic. Like, he's just like hanging out with any of the other comics. But man, that was pretty amazing that he had just hung out with us that long. But that's what he does. He's so good at just hanging out like a normal dude.
Yeah, I always feel like he does so many things.
Right.
That 30 minutes is a long time for him.
Well, when we were at his house before the taping, the night before,
they were editing videos.
He was doing a video for every single song that he was releasing.
On his new album.
So that's 14 different music videos.
Right. Yeah.
Which is insane.
Right.
That's so many.
Ugh.
Ugh. I mean, wow.
That was Brad Paisley, everyone.
Just in case.
Because you didn't know who that was. This is our first ever fried podcast.
Well, this is our first ever interview.
I know it was. Well, unless you count my mom.
No, your mom.
That's not an interview. You're right. That's more of a report.
Yes.
Yeah.
John's mom on the podcast will be bleh.
Will be. It's more of a report. It's a Betty Boo's movie reviews.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
She does movie reviews for us, and then we're also going to be doing. We're going to be doing lots of fun stuff.
Yeah, we got tons of segments we'd like to throw out there.
Yeah.
What do you want to go to next?
I wanted to see what you were...
Wait, you know what? You never did answer the question about what's the craziest venue you played in. I said mine. I could elaborate more on that. And then you probably have something crazy, too.
I also performed in a boxing ring, which was pretty...
A boxing ring?
In Iraq.
Well, then, that's... Well...
Which is pretty...
A ring is a ring, I guess. Did you have the ropes up?
Oh, the ropes were up because they used it... It was really the only, you know, you've done military tours overseas.
Nope, never did.
Well, when you
should
a military tour or even a CONUS, like the Continental United States, you'll perform in their MWR room, which stands for Morale, Welfare, Recreation. And so usually when we were on tour, we would perform in wherever their MWR room was.
Okay.
This particular base, there were probably only about 200 people on the base. It was right on the Iran border. And all they had was a boxing ring, and then they had a couple decks of cards and I think a Scrabble game. That was literally all. I mean, we had come from bases where they had, you know, golf range clubs set up to where it's like one of those like green screen driving ranges and like tons of video games and a computer lab. This space did not have any of that.
So for entertainment, all they had was a boxing ring.
They had a boxing ring and they would
Scrabble,
do
cards.
Yes. And they would do scorpion fights in the boxing ring, and they would like bet on them.
Oh, wow.
And we were literally the biggest entertainment that they had had their entire stay.
Wow.
And they brought all of their Humvees and tanks around the ring.
Right.
And they sat on top of them like a NASCAR race with like chairs.
Wow.
And then there were a bunch of chairs set up in front for like, you know, the brass.
That's cool.
And we performed right there. Performed on the back of the truck there. I was going to say, when he was talking about performing when dinner served or lunch or whatever.
Yeah, we have to battle that all the time.
Which reminded me of a gig that you told me about one time in a lunchroom.
Oh, yeah.
Where there was no one there.
Right.
They didn't know you were coming up.
Yeah.
It's like when... So when you're a comedian and you would do these colleges, half the time you do a college, they forget that you're even coming.
Yes.
So colleges book entertainment because they get a certain budget every year. If they don't use that budget, they don't get that same budget the next year.
Right.
So they really don't have an incentive to go. They just have incentive to use the budget.
Right.
So really you're just there getting a paycheck, which helps them get that same money the next year for maybe a comedian they really want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, well, we spend every dime.
We couldn't get Dane Cook, so now we're just going to get 10 people
who
we don't really care about, just so we can try to get Dane Cook next year.
Exactly.
And so I showed up at this. It was at Penn State York, which was out in Amish country in Pennsylvania. It was at noon in a lunchroom.
Right. This sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I've done my fair share of these.
I was opening up for a band.
Oh.
And I had to do, you know, like an hour. And like everybody's coming in.
Was the stage already set for the band?
There was a stage set up. So I was like performing in front of the band's drum kit or whatever. And I mean, it's like people are talking the mm-hmm. whole time, just like, ugh, it's so, whatever radio is on is very loud during our conversation. And right. I'm like, you know what? I just have got to get through this because that's what I'm paid to do.
Yeah, it's hell.
But
you know?
you told me once that you went to do this college, and the night before you had opened for Dwight Yoakam.
Have we talked about this on the show? Oh, Dwight Yoakam.
You told me this story, and I tell this story to other comics when they are sad about a gig they just did. I go, let me tell you about this gig John Reap did. And I'll tell it for you.
Go ahead.
So the night before, John has opened up for Dwight Yoakam. Mm-hmm. He comes to do this gig at a college. Right. He shows up. He can't find the lady in charge. Finally finds her, and she goes, oh, that's right, the comedian. There's a microphone in the lunchroom. Mm-hmm. Just get out of the closet, plug it in.
Just go.
Do your hour. Come back, and I'll give you your check.
Right. It was really okay.
But then you showed up, and there were three kids in the lunchroom studying.
And they're not even together.
Yeah.
Spread out.
But you gathered them together.
Yeah, I said, guys, I apologize to them. I said, I know you're not here to see me. I know you're probably studying for a test that's coming up, but I'm being forced to talk out loud for 1 hour.
I have to do this.
I have to do this. And if you know, I understand if you want to leave. Mm-hmm. You may leave. I mean, and then they said, what? Oh, what is it? And then I said, well, come over here. I don't want to yell at you. And then I just got them all to sit at one table, and we sat down.
But didn't you convince them to go underneath the
table? I did.
Tables?
At some point, I did, because I had a wireless mic.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even need the microphone. I mean, the first 20 minutes was me just talking to them, like, what are you going to do for Christmas? You know, I wasn't even doing an act. I was just talking to them.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, you don't have to do the act.
You're just doing crowd work.
You're getting paid to talk out loud.
Yeah, they don't care about your...
So I said, then we had fun with the wireless mic because it was a big cafeteria, and people would come in randomly to go to a soda machine or get a vent, you know. And I said, let's get on the table and pretend to be the machine that's talking to them. So I got on their table, and they'd walk up with a dollar bill, like, please insert $1, like that. And the speaker was like, the speakers were in the roof.
So loud.
It was like, it's part of the, mm-hmm. like, you know. So I guess they kind of believed it for a little. We had fun with that. It was like a little hidden camera prank show for no reason.
But that inspired me to always like think about the situation and just adapt. And mm-hmm. I think as a comedian, you're constantly having to adapt to a wrestling ring.
Yeah, that was weird.
So why were you in a wrestling ring?
Okay, so I got hired to do this gig. There's some local DJs in Little Rock, Arkansas, who have been putting on this gig. They're aspiring comics, husband and wife. Mm-hmm. They also have a morning radio show. And they've been putting on this show, a stand-up show, to raise money for some, I forgot what the charity was, mm-hmm. but it was freaking cost.
DJs Without Borders.
DJs Without Jokes.
Sure.
Yeah. And so it was a charity thing, plus a fundraiser, all that together, and they always bring a comedian in to headline it, and they want to open it, you know? Mm-hmm. So they work with a promoter, and they have it at different places, and this year they had it at this place called the Metroplex, a big event center, which has all kinds of events that come in there, music, you know, mm-hmm. Wrestling. And so it just so happened to be that the next couple days after my performance was wrestling. And so they already had this thing set up. But they said, well, we're going to take the ropes out so they can see you. So they took the ropes off the ring. But I'm standing in the ring doing jokes, you know, and they had little cameras set up on each little corner so that when my back is turned, then the other crowd can at least see my face on the big screen that's mm-hmm. above my head. It was bizarre.
Now, when you're in a situation like that, do you tell a joke about the situation, in the situation, just to let everybody know, I know I'm in a wrestling ring, just so you guys
almost
know.
You kind of have to, otherwise you look like an idiot.
Yeah, right?
So I kind of went up there and said, well, this is a first for me. I've never performed in a wrestling ring before.
Or indoors. You just,
<I've never laughs> right, in front of people at all. So I pretended to do like this little wrestling move a couple times. Uh-huh. Every time I'd do a joke that would kill, I'd pretend that, you know, instead of dropping the mic or doing thing, I would run up against these fake ropes that are out there. And
do you normally drop the mic when you do a joke?
No, I don't know what I normally do, but I pretended it was a thing that I always do. but it seemed to work. They liked it.
I would have been like, this is the only ring I'm ever going to get. So
it was weird because you'd see people like in that kind of environment, it's okay to get up and in the middle of a joke and go pee or, you know, mm-hmm. randomly lean over and talk to your friend because it's set up for wrestling. Mm-hmm. And in wrestling, you're allowed to talk to your neighbors or, you know, your people around you or, you know, they weren't like you had to really get their attention for them to pay attention. Because the minute you turn your back on that side, this side starts getting talky again. So you had to, like, I literally had to walk around. It was weird. Like, I felt like Chris Rock. You know, he's always pacing. Except I was just doing laps, you know.
Well, I would also say that performing with Brad at the Hollywood Bowl might be one of the other craziest places by far.
Yeah.
It's definitely the most
iconic, should have brought that up with him.
Iconic, legendary place that I've ever performed. You know, we were only the fourth and fifth comedians ever on that stage.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
You know, the other people who have been there were Eddie Murphy, well, for Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy, and Eddie Izzard.
No kidding.
That's it.
Wow.
And
I
then
like
it was
that.
Me and John Reap.
Check that off the list.
Yeah. And literally the next
Sorry,
night.
Sorry, Louis C.K.
The next night, Eddie Izzard was playing there.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right.
And I went to see him. And I went with my friend Michael Cox, who books the Tonight Show. And at the time, he was booking Chelsea, which is why I knew him. Mm-hmm. I definitely would never have known him if he had always been booking the Tonight Show. I never done that. And then we walked in. I just, like, all day I was waiting. And we walked in to get our seats. And I said, oh, this is what it looks like from the audience perspective.
Yeah.
Like, I've only ever been on stage at the Hollywood Bowl. I've never sat in the audience.
Oh, this is where you guys have a different sort of point of view out here.
This is a different view. Yeah. Huh. Oh, he was like, you motherfucker.
It's funny, though. I remember, like, not... I survived this, what I tell people. Like, how did your performance go? Like, oh, I survived it. You know, for me, it was, it was my fault, because I told Brad it'd be funny if I walked out there and pretended to be a roadie and test the mics and then just start doing my set as opposed to being introduced.
Right.
So when I walked out there, there wasn't like, ladies and gentlemen, a good friend of Brad Paisley, please pay attention and clap your hands for John Reap. There was nothing like that, which would have helped.
Did he introduce you?
No one introduced me.
Oh.
He just goes, go ahead. And I go,
Oh my God.
So I walked out there. I walked up to the mic. I was like, test one, check one, check one. Kenny Chesney's not here. Chesney, wrong concert. I walk up to another mic and I do another mic check, and then I go, can y'all hear me in the back? And they're like, yeah. I was like, cool, man. And then I just started talking. I just started getting into my set. But it was weird because I've never done that before.
It's not
something I'm used to doing. And that's the first time I've done it. And that was at the Hollywood Bowl. It took me a good 3 minutes to get everyone's attention. Go like, oh, okay, this guy's a stand-up.
Well, we also, like, we came out together at the very beginning.
Yeah, in the beginning,
told
we came
everybody
out
that we were going to be doing it.
But then by the time I got back up there, it was totally dark and it was a whole new crowd.
Right, it was full. See, when I went out, so we went out there together, then Mickey Guyton came out.
That's right.
And then, so Brad introduced me.
Right, and then you came out.
And then I came out.
Yourself.
And it's still light outside.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to play to the people in the front because I guarantee, you know, it's 17,000 seats for people who haven't. Been there, and you know, and it's an amphitheater, so sound actually travels really well. Like, as comedians will tell you, that doing comedy outside in front of a band is usually horrible because the laughter just dissipates immediately. But this was different. It was like it was all held in. It might as well have been indoors.
Yeah.
And so I walked out and I was like, I'm just gonna play the people in front. I'm doing 5 minutes or whatever, so basically John and I were there as the bands were resetting.
Right.
So they're setting up Justin Moore behind me while I perform.
Right.
And then I was like, I just remember the second joke I told was, my dad's a really tough guy. He fought during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And the joke is mostly in bars with his friends because he did not go.
Yeah.
And I said, my dad's a really tough guy because he fought during the Vietnam War. Everyone applauded.
Right. Yeah.
And I was like, oh no.
They're going to hate me in 2 seconds.
I'm screwed. and then I said, you know, mostly in bars, and everybody laughed. And at that moment, I just relaxed and I was like, I can do whatever I want.
Right.
And I also, Brad's wife, Kim, was there, and we had met Kim before. And so I looked at her too, and I kind of like relax when I'm looking at her because I know that she's like such a, you know, a good judge of, if she's laughing, I feel like everybody else will be laughing. Mm-hmm. So I caught her for a second and I was like, okay, everything's going to be all right.
Yeah.
And I was, you know.
Yeah. You did great. I did okay,
but I mean, literally, you had twice as many people there when you went up.
And no introduction.
No introduction. And
your crowd in the front row was laughing. I remember one guy going like, "You suck!" I swear to God.
No, you did
I ignored him. Well, he didn't even know I was a comedian. He just, Anyway, like I said, I survived.
Well.
But then when I got off stage, everyone was like, "Dude, that was great." You always think it's horrible when you're in the moment.
Yeah, of course. Well, if you're comparing it to a normal club gig.
Right.
Literally.
Headlining with people there to see you.
A month later, I got asked to open for Aretha Franklin, which is like, wow. I was like, what? But apparently she's with our same agency, who was also Brad's agent, you know? And they're like, she wanted a comedian because they're cheaper and she didn't have to pay for a band.
Right.
And it was like no money. And it was at the Santa Barbara amphitheater. And they were like, well, we need a comic who has experience outdoors at an amphitheater. And I had just done the Hollywood Bowl. So they're like, well, we'll get Sarah to do it.
That's experience.
And it was literally one of the worst experiences of my life.
I had to
do 25 minutes.
Oh,
I show up. It's just me and Aretha Franklin on the bill. It says Sarah Tiana, Aretha Franklin backstage, right? Uh-huh. Like the good old days, right? Uh-huh. Like just our normal tour.
Okay.
And I mean, they have no idea a comedian's coming out. It's not like Brad put an announcement out. And, you know, oh my God.
That's something that they got to learn to do. I mean, you got to make it easy for us.
He's right, though. Like, if we started out just like hanging out after his concerts at a comedy club and just dicking around. Mm-hmm.
Slowly people get it.
Slowly, but surely.
Especially with this Netflix thing, hopefully they'll see, okay, this is something he kind of does
now. But that's the thing is, like, I don't know if, we have to wrap it up, but I don't know if people have said it to you, but they're just like, why does Brad Paisley have a Netflix special too? And I'm like, it's him introducing us, honestly, but also, we know how funny he is. I forget that other people don't realize.
Well, why not, Brad? I mean, he can do anything he wants. He's huge. People will watch it just to see him.
That was the other thing I was going to say to him was that I wonder if the reason him and Peyton Manning have such an okay time making fun of themselves, if it's because they're so hugely famous that they're like, yeah, you can make fun of me all you want. I'm still going to go back to my third mansion.
Now
it's a little bit easier. Yeah. But that was amazing.
This is our first episode that you've ever heard.
Yeah, it's normally not like this. We'll tell you that we have segments normally in our episodes, but we just got really carried away with Brad, and we're very excited about this special. It's been something that we've been wanting to promote for so long now. We're so excited it's about to come out. So August 15th on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Please tune in. Let us know what you think, good or bad. We just want
to
hear.
Yeah, go to our little social websites. Whatever you're on, I'm on it too. Whether it be Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, everything is just JonReep. John Reep, find me, email me, let me know what you think. I'm sure the same thing.
Yeah, John does not have an H in his name. I do.
She took my H.
I took the H. It's Sarah with an H, Tiana with a Tiana. it's like Tiara, but with an N.
Yeah, I got it.
So that's the same on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
Yeah, let us know. We're on the road all the time, touring.
Right. Stand-up. Next week, so the week of the 15th, so it'll be the 16th through the 20th, I'll be in St. Louis at the Funny Bone.
Nice. I will be at a place called the Orange Peel in Asheville, North Carolina, August 24
Orange.
And 25. Yeah, so check that out. Myrtle Beach at the end of that weekend. And should we wrap it up?
I think we should wrap it up.
How do we end
this? Do
you
have anything else that you wanted to say?
I think
we're
good. Let's let them know that we got some DNA results that are coming out. We've got some segments, small town, hometown news sort of stuff. My mother will be calling in doing some movie reviews. You get to hear my mom meet her.
Yeah, and when football season comes, I'm going to have my dad give us his picks.
So thanks for bearing with us. We hope that you will continue to listen to Fried with John Reap and Sarah Tiana. We appreciate it.
Well, I was raised up beneath the shade of a Georgia pine, and that's home, you know, sweet tea, pecan pie, and homemade wine.